Welcome to a very special E3 episode of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 5th, 2012. I am Matthew Furlough, and this is my brother James Furlough. Along with us today, we have two professional gamers, David Perry and Roger Fong.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Yeah. Pretty exciting, talking a little E3 this week. So this week, today, unlike every week, we'll be talking about gaming technology and the continuing game industry's corporate opera, the soap opera that is corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the fantastic technology that they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, I think all of us have a short disclosure we want to throw out there.
So I'll start, because it actually doesn't matter this week. So I work for HP, but I don't represent HP, but since we won't mention them at all, who cares? So I should always say I when never talking about myself, and should never say we when talking about HP. But it won't happen.
Cool.
Talking about HP.
David, Roger, you guys got anything?
So I also work at HP, but we ditched hanging out with video games a long time ago, so I don't have to worry about it. But all right. All the best.
Cool.
Other disclosure, Dave is drinking a malted beverage, I believe.
That's right.
So, I'm Roger. Dave and I did a video games podcast a few years back. I used to work for Nintendo, which is why we stopped the podcast, because apparently it was against our employee code of conduct. And the 30 or so listeners we had was not worth risking the job. So other than that, my only other disclaimer is that all my opinions are my own.
Yeah, and like every week, I like to throw out the fact that I have a job, because for at least now I do. Once again, you can follow us if you're following us live. You can follow us on YouTube. This is becoming a regular live broadcast, usually Sunday nights at 8. Go to James Furlough's YouTube channel if you want to watch it, catch it live, comment, and we respond to comments. It's pretty cool. But throughout the week, you can also follow us follow me. My personal Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlough.
I am at James Furlough.
Yeah, and we've got a Facebook page for the Furlough Bros. You can go to Google+, which is also Furlough Bros. And then the big hub of everything, it's got all those links, it's got places to share, it's got all of our contact information. Go to furloughbros.com. And the cool part about this particular episode, is it'll have some additional contact information, if so desired, by David and Roger. You want to throw that out there real quick? Have you got anything?
So I'm all over the internets. You just have to seek me out. I'm at Dutch726 on Twitter. The rest is a mystery.
You're an idiot, Dave. But you are a mystery. I can be found at RoboFong, all one word, Twitter. And you can, if you really want to play games with me, LT Fong on Xbox Live.
Nice. Now that is
legit. Remember your 18-digit friends code on your Wii?
Please get ready for his 18-digit friends code, 1089473.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah, jeez. Oh, man, good times. So, cool. So, yeah, like we said, this week is pretty awesome. E3 is going on. Is it? I can't remember. Is it actually done today?
No, it's right in the heat of it. It's day one.
Oh, man.
So yesterday, it's really weird. Yesterday was day zero. Don't have the show floor opening yesterday, but they have all the major press conferences, and then the first day of the show floor was today, and then I think it goes like 2 or 3 days.
Right. So the nice part about doing it today is we get to catch all the major press stuff, We just don't necessarily get the... I actually got to play with this game, and it was pretty fun reviews, right?
Right. The only one in this room that's gone to E3 twice is RoboFong here. And I'm horribly jealous.
I haven't been to PAX before, but E3 is kind of a letdown. And I know most people, you know, they're dying for the chance to go. But it's just, do you want to wait in line a full day to play the Wii U? I don't know if that's Maybe. Worth it, man.
Yeah.
A couple of hours. Yeah. Last year it was a PS Vita. I was not going to wait 8 hours to play the Vita. I looked at it from afar. Yeah, I get it. It's a really nice OLED screen. Dual analog. Looks great. Don't need to wait all day. Anyways, I digress.
So they started, first off the bat, they had the Microsoft press conference, and then EA went, and then Ubisoft, and then... Sony went last night, and then Nintendo went this morning. So we can just go chronologically through it if you guys want.
I love it.
Yeah, it sounds good. Let's do it. So the first day was Microsoft, the creators of Windows. What are they doing with games?
Man. Didn't seem like, Dave, there was a whole lot of gaming going on at the Microsoft show.
No, Microsoft loves the fact that they're making the Omnibox. You can watch music, TV, videos, and oh yeah, maybe play a game or two.
Yeah.
So they spent a lot of time talking about all the other stuff they do. They did jump straight out of the gate with their big guns blazing, their big bet of buying out the Halo franchise from Bungie and brought it in-house for 343 Studios, and they had to show that Halo is still Halo and Halo's awesome. I think they delivered on that.
So this is, to me, when I first heard that Bungie wasn't going to be handling Halo, because to me, the cool part about, you know, Halo is awesome for a number of different reasons, but the reason I loved the original Halo especially was because it was just a fantastic storytelling and really, you know, a pretty remarkable tale that they had spun. So how does Halo 4 feel from a distance? I mean, is it going to live up to the legacy?
I'm liking what 343 is doing. Just that quick little, you know, sneak peek we got at the show. It looked like, I don't know what they're doing with the Xbox hardware. The graphics look much improved. I don't know your take on that, Dave, but the
texture, I agree.
Everything looked a lot better. And it looked like there was some sprinting involved, which is, correct me, forget if I'm wrong, that's not a Halo standby, is that, Dave?
I think they did put that in Reach, but it wasn't in the earlier Halos. But I think that the big thing that I was worried about was that Halo really told the kind of story arc of Master Chief and the Halo and the Covenant and all that, and they kind of finished that. And, in fact, their marketing tagline was finish the fight, so it's a little odd that 4 is now here.
Right.
I think they did a good job. There was, like, some of the Covenant, there was almost this kind of, like, biomechanical-looking enemy, so there's probably a new bad guy. It's not, you know, explicitly grunts and elites and hunters all from the Covenant kind of thing. I think there's new baddies to be had, so... We don't know much of the story, but they just showed some of the gameplay. And then there's supposedly, on the multiplayer, supposed to do something that's kind of interesting, where it's like almost like a TV show, that there'll be like episodic, story-based multiplayer missions that will come out over time. So like play this episode this week, and then next week play this next episode, and then following week play this episode again.
Yeah. Almost like it's like a gladiatorial type thing, and they're broadcasting it for you to play through. Is that like the idea, or is it like totally off base?
I think it's more story based, but I don't. It's hard to say. I don't know. We don't know yet.
Okay. All right.
I think they're just trying to do some new things with it. So.
Yeah. Trying to give you a reason to not just pick up the original one and play multiplayer again because of how brilliant it was.
Well, there's a lot of those type of games that they showed of just kind of trot out the franchise, the new version of that franchise kind of thing. So. Halo was actually one that I was surprised that they trotted out the franchise and it felt like it was going to be different and good.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, I think 343, cool. The studio behind Halo 4, I'm going to get the number right, man. they had a lot to prove. They had a lot that could go wrong when they showed this off, but I think they A+ on you know what they've shown so far. I think they're on the right track. It's enough of Halo, but it looks like enough new freshness to the franchise that I think the fans will definitely come back for it.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Raj, what did you think about like EA and the whole better with Kinect yelling at the screen?
I have yet to even try that Skyrim or Mass Effect. I haven't done it yet. I had what was that old PlayStation 3 game? Tom Clancy.
Oh, the Total War or something like that, shouted commands.
I feel weird. That whole thing just seems weird to me. I don't want to sit there. My wife is looking at me like, "Who are you talking to?"
Let's clarify this a little because I've professed that I'm not quite as familiar with video games as I'd like to be. So what is this? You're like, you're playing a game. You're like going around shooting. You like can like throw out commands and stuff, and you know, command troops and things.
So kind of it is what it is, Matt. It's they had Joe Montana come on stage.
Yes.
They had the Kinect set up, so it's all voice command, and he's sitting there, and they kind of play it as Joe comes out. He's like, "Oh, hey, I'm Joe Montana. How do I play video games? I know how to be an NFL quarterback."
Yeah.
And then the Microsoft guy's like, "Oh, here's what you do, Joe. You get in the huddle, and you just call out commands." And he's like, "All right, here we go. Red left." And then it shows it registered it. I mean, more power to him on stage. Looked like a live demo. It worked flawlessly. It just a little, I don't know. I mean, if that's what you're into.
I used it on Mass Effect. I thought it was interesting on Mass Effect to tell your squad what to do. And I think the, because Kinect does a variety of things, Matthew. It does kind of Wii controls where you can use your body to control the game, and it doesn't have a wand or a stick or anything like that, but then it also has facial recognition, and it also has voice recognition, and so like a lot of the game companies are working on this voice recognition angle, and there's this marketing tagline of better with Kinect, and so it's like the same damn game, but it has Kinect commands. And actually, the thing that I thought was most interesting wasn't Madden, but in FIFA, if you're sitting there playing the game and there's a call, just like, what happens is somebody was like, "Oh, that's total bleep," and yelled, "That's total crap," you know? The ref pulled out a yellow card in the FIFA game. They're like, "Oh, watch your language. Your language." And they yellow carded the guy in the game because they picked up that he said an expletive after the call and punished him for, unsportsmanlike conduct.
I have a feeling that's going to make for some awesome YouTube videos.
just get ejected from your own.
The accelerating game. Just, oh my gosh! being on stuff.
Yeah,
so I'd love to get the Furlo Bros take on this. You know, let's sidestep a little bit, but it's germane to E3 because I think the, like Dave was saying, the voice command is a big part of Kinect. And do you guys think it's a matter of just culture, a matter of time before we all get used to voice command, voice activation, where we're comfortable just sitting in front of our smart TV and telling it, you know, to turn on the latest episode of Mad Men, or talking to our phones in the middle, you know, in public? Is that a matter of time before they become socially acceptable? Or what do you guys take on that?
I'm gonna defer the worst possible way I could. I'm gonna say I can't wait to see how Apple handles it. because to me, I guess what happens is where each of these, what I've seen so far, voice commands is there's a clear limitation in performance. It's difficult, and Apple's big thing with Siri right now is we want to get really hyper intelligent communication. I think it's going to be an evolutionary process. I think it's a good move on Microsoft's part to start with games, really focus on, we're going to bring this into games, we're going to make it controls, because they started. They invented, not invented, but they wrote Solitaire originally, not because they thought it would be this cool game that like would you know, maybe you'd be awesome and sell systems. They sold it because it allowed you to practice the click and drag, which was a difficult new user interface thing. People didn't understand it. So they built this simple to understand game, this game that people already knew how to play, and using this new technology. And, you know, that was the entire purpose behind that. And then it ends up being this, you know, it ends up being Solitaire and destroying, you know, billions of dollars worth of, you know, valuable work hours for employees. You know, and so I think if you can get a game that really brings in voice command, it works effectively, it works well. You know, I've long thought when the Kinect first came out, you know, I just hearing about it, I was like, this is awesome, because to me the idea of sitting there, your Master Chief or your whoever, or you know, you're going around shooting your guns, first person, you know, shooter. If you can like put your hand up and like point to where you want your platoon to go when you want to be quiet, or yell out like sophisticated commands and stuff, you know, and so that your thumbs and your fingers are doing your personal control, but you're giving these bigger controls for a more sophisticated experience. And I thought that would be really awesome. And as they step towards that direction, I think what you're going to see is an evolution towards better games, and eventually people being very comfortable saying, hey, Xbox, play me this YouTube video, and it's searching for it and playing for it right, you know, playing it right away. I definitely think that's the direction that everybody wants to trudge down. Well, what do you think, James?
I think it'll become the norm in certain situations. I know right now voice commands are awesome in the car because, you know, you're supposed to have your hands on the wheel, and so it allows you to do something that you previously couldn't do. Mm-hmm. We're still kind of waiting for that point where voice commands let you do something more effectively and easier than what you can do with your fingers, because we're pretty skilled with our hands, has been my observation. I think it'll get there eventually. You know, like Matthew was talking about, once the recognition is good enough, I think, where you can give those commands and it doesn't get distracted by the kids playing by you next to you. It'll get there. I mean, we're at the very early stages. I'd rather see him focus on, you know, virtual reality, but that's one step at a time.
Dave, I'm curious. So voice commands, it's clear, you know, James and Matt followed us through different categories. It's voice commands showing up in a lot of different devices. So, Dave, I'm curious, why, from a marketing perspective, every Xbox comes with a headset, so why do I have to use a speakerphone version of Kinect and this speakerphone microphone to do commands? Why couldn't I just use my headset?
I think you could use the headset. I think the only technology in the Kinect is the Array microphone. It's not the it's all software. So you could do the headset, you know, through the headset, but I think they're trying to make it so the Kinect is something that you can do with your body and your voice. It's one of the value propositions.
Yeah, I think the goal is to get you away from, right now their strategy is to get the controller out of your hands and the headphones off of your ears and, you know,
the
glasses off your face. Just get everything so that it's just you, you know, on the couch or standing in the room or whatever.
And, totally agree.
You know, if I were watching a movie, I wouldn't want to have the headphones with the speaker right on my head. I think that's what they really want to push that direction, and so they're not even gonna, you know, entertain other ideas, you know.
That's mostly what I've used my Kinect for, is to run the like media, run Netflix or Hulu or whatever, because I'm too lazy to go grab my controller. I just bark commands from across the room at my Xbox. So.
But in all fairness, I mean, to what we're talking about, one of the announcements that Microsoft made yesterday was that Internet Explorer is going to come to the Xbox. And the primary innovation, I guess you could say, is that, you know, they straight up said the keyboard and mouse have no place in the living room. So what we're going to do is bring...
Internet Explorer has no place in the internet.
Oh, burn.
Ice cold.
But being able to access the internet on the biggest screen in your house through voice command, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's a compelling idea, and I definitely think that you know, yeah, obviously Google and Apple are pursuing that to a large degree as well. And if they, you know, if they come up with a user interface that really does that well, that would be pretty awesome. I'd be excited to see that. It, like I said, it's just unfortunate that it's, you know, Internet Explorer and not a
right.
not a modern browser.
So a couple of the other things they showed was they trotted out a lot of older properties, so like Splinter Cell, Fable, Gears of War, Forza, and they were all just kind of like the next iteration of Gears of War and the next iteration of Forza, and it's kind of boring. Which is funny because I think Halo was really interesting, but I think Halo was more of kind of this like almost like schadenfreude of like they're going to suck because they're not Bungie. Oh wait, they're not. That's actually okay. You know, it's 343. I think most people were like, well, let's see what this train wreck looks like, and they're actually doing a pretty good job. So I think that's why it's of interest. I think they have been expanding. Another thing, which was really weird in a video game thing, they showed that they were increasing the functionality of their Bing searches, so you could say, like, by genre and all this, and it was really super boring. And then this guy started talking in Espanol to his Xbox and showing that it could support Spanish now. And
so, guys, and how do you say Xbox en Espanol?
Xbox. Xbox.
Apparently it's Xbox, if the demo was to be believed.
There was, like, some, I think, like, game, I do not speak Spanish at all, but there was, like, games were, like, huevo, or so, I was like, did Huevos, he just say, yeah, did yeah. he just say balls? I'm a little
of something. Xbox balls.
Xbox balls, I was like, clearly you guys gotta work on something. Maybe I'm just a gringo or something, but I think he just called his Xbox balls. I don't know.
So, you know, something else that was somewhat a couple of points. I want to get into a couple of points that kind of wasn't said, reading between the lines. So the first one was Xbox Live Gold, which is, what is it now, $60 a year, $70
60 a year? Bones.
So I'm assuming what wasn't said is that they're bringing all these features to the consumer, but I'm assuming they're all going to be walled off behind the gold garden. You're going to have to maintain that gold subscription fee to access all these cool new features.
Man, that's brilliant. They've been wanting to do that. Microsoft has been wanting to do that for like half a decade, where they really want to move Windows to a subscription-based service where it's, you know, you pay $100 a year, and they just continually update and improve Windows. And you never actually buy a new version of Windows. You just get the newest update, and you pay $100 every year, or whatever price point they set. So that's interesting that's, you know, that they had this opportunity, you know, right about the time that they're developing the Xbox and Xbox Live. They're also thinking about that we need to move towards having our operating systems be subscription-based. And that's sort of been their strategy with the...
My thinking is that they're building out a model, a system where they can build out an Omnibox, and that like Comcast has the digital box, and you buy the box from Comcast, and it's got Xbox branding on it, and then you build into your monthly cable bill $10 a month to Xbox, and you don't even notice it because you're paying $18,000 for cable and an extra 10 bucks for Xbox. You won't even notice the difference, and then they don't even have an Xbox next time around. It's just software built into a set-top box.
Damn, I think I'd pay that. I'd pay $10.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. CES 2013. You heard it here first on the Furlough Brothers podcast.
That's right.
Omnibox. Prediction. Well, you saw my... I speak with an air of expertise.
Strategic video game strategist.
So the other thing that wasn't said was, since we're on a, you know, tech podcast, what the heck happened to Zune? So it was a device at one point, then it became an iTunes competitor, and now we have Xbox Music. Does this mean Zune, the whole branding, is going away?
Yes.
I think so.
They officially killed it yesterday.
Yep. Yeah, I think so. I think they're like Xbox better brand than Zune. Zune dead.
Yeah, but, you know, there's such a movement right now within the whole company to have the tiles and Xbox. Those are like they're two things, and I think over time you'll see Xbox actually move towards the tile interface as
it
well.
It already is. It already yeah. Their latest software is on the Metro UI.
Metro.
Mm-hmm. And Metro is really not that good for the video game system.
You know,
it's totally yeah. crap.
But they're really trying to pair off any bad IP that they have right now, and
right,
and just stick with stuff that works.
So, Rog, yeah. you liked their announcement with their partnership with Nike. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Who's that?
Nike. Nike.
Oh, right.
I was trying to say it en español.
Nike.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yeah. So Nike Plus. What do they call it? Nike Plus Connect. Is that what they're calling that? They
something
only flashed
like
a box front up yeah, for several seconds. But yeah, I think the whole Nike Plus ecosystem is interesting. I just looked it up on my iTunes app store, $1.99. So it's a paid app, premium, you know. $2. I'm a cheapskate. I'm not going to buy it. Maybe you can go online and use it for free. I haven't tried it. But I think the fact that they get one, maybe the biggest, you know, brand, we'll just say one of the biggest global brands of all time, Nike, on the, you know, pairing it with Kinect, pairing it with fitness, could this be the big coup where Microsoft steals the Wii Fit mom from Nintendo, brings them over to the Xbox platform?
Well, you know what I love about that is that, like, Nintendo fought that thing kicking and screaming. They didn't want the Wii to be a fitness thing. They're like, no, it's just a gaming system. Don't, you know, and they came out with Wii Fit so begrudgingly. You know, there's a little part of me that wonders if they wouldn't mind just being like, okay, Microsoft, you can have that. Yeah. Deal with that crowd. We focus on gaming.
Oh, Reggie, we're not going to get into it quite yet, but Reggie mentioned in the Nintendo presser today, 43 million sold worldwide. So yeah. they're obviously proud of that. So
yeah, that's true.
You know, it brings mom. It brings, you know, a lot of places the head of household who's got the purse strings, the everyday, you know, daily budget, who lets, you know, makes decisions on what you know, the family purchases and how entertainment goes. I think mom is a big purchase influencer in most households.
That's true.
I thought the Nike Plus thing, I thought, because the whole thing with Nike is like, get off your butt cheeks and go outside and go run or jump or go do some obstacle course and be awesome and run in the Olympics, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So, like, it was a little, like, weird of, like, no, I guess you can be inside and on the couch in front of the TV doing the Nike Plus game. Like, it was a little yeah. weird to me because, like, their whole branding is, like, get outside, go do something.
Just do it, yeah.
Yeah. So it was a little, I guess it's go outside unless it's raining like Oregon. Then stay inside and play Xbox.
But Nike is in Oregon, man.
I know, exactly. Exactly.
So, I mean, just my last comment on Nike Plus Connect. Think about this. The person who's got Connect on the entertainment center and on the video game shelf, they've got Dance Central. Maybe they got a copy of Gears or Halo or COD. And then they've, you know, then they can put in this fitness title that goes along right now. Maybe they have Madden, you know. The mainstream, I've got, maybe I buy one or two games a year, kind of, you know, more casual Xbox gamer. I could see them meshing with Nike Plus in a big way.
Yeah, definitely.
So the another thing they announced kind of more on the content side is they're adding 35 more video content apps, and they're really going deep into some sports. So they're going to do NHL wow. Center Ice, NBA League Pass. They're going to upgrade their ESPN 3 app to the Watch ESPN app, so it'll have ESPN 1, 2, and 3 and ESPN U.
And they had ESPN, the Ocho.
Machinima. Well, hold on to that Ocho fact. And then they Machinima, which is a video game kind of show or website, and then Univision. It was very like Spanish centric.
Please.
Spanish centric. E3, they're wow. appealing to yeah. their the Spaniards.
I think they're acknowledging demographic change in America, if nothing else. Which, you know,
it's just, do you live in California?
Yes, I do. So. Yeah,
and the other furlough, you're in Texas, right? Big Hispanic populations, no joke. I mean, Dave, you're in marketing. The the big kind of untapped market for a lot of technology companies is this so-called Hispanic market. And I think beyond that, globally, Brazil is what the next emerging market on the planet.
Give them the Univision.
Makes sense. Gives
them that's my bad, because they speak Portuguese in Brazil.
I was going to say, they don't speak Spanish, do they?
That's funny. That's awesome.
We're all just sitting here nodding. Yeah.
Yes. Spanish.
I'm going to go ahead and go
Latin America. Yes.
Awesome.
I think the biggest thing of the Xbox press conference was the next thing it announced, which was smart glass.
And yeah, I want to hear about this.
The idea behind smart glass is that it is a second screen for your Xbox, and it takes on some capabilities that the Wii U would have, as well as like Apple AirPlay. So the idea would be that you could watch a video on your phone and then throw it up to your Xbox, take it off your Xbox, throw it down to your phone, be able to play a game and have like the Madden football play on your screen, those sort of things. The huge thing on this, I think, that's crazy is that Microsoft did this in a device-agnostic way, which is very uncharacteristically Microsoft. Microsoft usually is like, it is our platform, it is the Windows tablet, it is the Windows mobile phone, that's what you're going to get to have. Are you like panning for gold in the background there?
So I suddenly realized that I looked at my battery. I'm like, I've got like 10% left on my battery. I'm plugged into everything. I just don't have any power. So I'm kind of freaking out here.
That's funny. All right, I'll try not to be distracted by that.
Dude, I thought Matt was working part time at an Amazon fulfillment center or something. There, he got an order came down. He had to start boxing. I didn't know what was happening.
Just put some stuff in.
Don't worry, guys. I'll be back.
So, anyways, back to the Xbox. I think it's huge. Crazy different than Xbox would ever do, that they are like, you can do iOS, you can do Android, you can do Windows Mobile. We don't care. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, me as well, and I'd love to get Matt and James your take on that, because Microsoft's been slowly coming around. I mean, they put Office on the Mac, which, Dave, you and I discussed that interestingly, Microsoft Office Mac was in the games and devices division, not
really
in the normal software, operating system division. Anyways,
wow.
So they've been slowly coming around, and then you see folks like Google making that move where Google's fairly agnostic. I mean, yeah, Google apps don't tend to be as fully integrated on iOS. I don't know how much that is Google's choice or their feeling against, the iOS being so restrictive. I'd love to get your guys' take. Is that is that a move admitting that, yeah, they don't have the tablet market, so they got to go iPad? Or what's the story with that?
I definitely think that's the only interpretation I can come up with. It's they're doing what Apple did at the beginning of the 90s, which was, Apple moved to the Pentium because they realized we can't win unless we can run Windows. I think it's the same thing they're saying. It's like, we've got this cool piece of technology and we got a couple choices. We could either do what, Nintendo's doing, which is force you to buy an extra piece of hardware. And right now they're pushing the Kinect, but everybody's already got these second, screens with them, whether it's a tablet or whatever. And so I think that comes down to a...
The other example I think is huge is that Apple finally made the decision early on in the iPod generation to release iTunes on Windows after iPod wasn't doing super great on the Mac. And I think that's actually what catapulted Apple into success, is helping bring the iPod onto Windows, that then got people buying iPods, that then got them to buy iPhones, that then got them to buy Macs and iPads. It just kind of brought them into their ecosystem slowly.
Yeah. I think what you'll see people do, I actually think it's a good move, because I think what you'll see people do is they'll be more likely to use this new interface and get used to this, whatever Metro thing they're doing. And then eventually Microsoft will say, yeah, all that cool stuff you can do on those other devices, you can do all that, but with way better integration if you buy within our walled garden.
Yep.
And go Microsoft only.
Yeah.
It's a good strategy.
So what's up with
Mac guy and I'm on the border.
I agree. So what's up with the name though? Smart Glass. When I mean I heard it and went, "Oh cool, new piece of hardware." Oh.
I think literally I heard actually that was their internal lab name.
Yeah.
That ended going all the way out. It didn't ever get a real branded name.
It's a cool name. I just think it's completely inappropriate for what it is.
Right. I was pissed. Right. Yeah, I thought I was going to get like a window that, you know, became a screen, you know, like you see in, you know, those Tom Cruise sci-fi movies.
Yeah.
I was going to be touching like my mirror and having screens come up and
Not to mention they've like released like 4 videos or 3 videos or whatever in the last year where they're like showing off what they call smart glass, and
yeah.
It's big glass panes where you're interacting with the smart glass, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, it's just your iPhone. So
yeah,
that's cool.
Microsoft Surface, all these great, cool, kind of futuristic techs. Yeah, and all it is hey, your iPad can work with your Xbox.
The other thing I was thinking was weird, they showed like some super-de-duper concept shots of like how this could work. And one of the ones they showed was like Madden selecting your play and then like actually redrawing an audible and letting the person go run that audible. But in actuality, a person would be holding their video game controller, and then you put down the video game controller, now pick up this and make your play, then put this back down, and then run your play, like, all in the space of, like, 5 seconds. You're supposed to take the controller out of your hand, pick up the iPhone, iPad, do your thing, put that down, pick that back up. You know, like, it seems cumbersome.
Yeah,
what
you really need are audio commands, I think. That would solve it.
Better with Kinect, maybe.
Wait a minute. We're going in circles, man.
You know what I'm going to make? I'm going to make an observation, because I, you know, just kind of knowing where we're heading with this, especially with Nintendo, but there definitely seems to be this movement in video games, in the video game industry right now, where like they feel like we're moving beyond the game controller, but they have absolutely no idea where we're actually going, and nobody has the vision or leadership, and so like every company's just throwing out like 17 different, like, you can control this way, or this way, or this way, you can control voice through these two different devices, or you control doing this, and you can do that, and like, and they're just kind of like, they're just throwing everything out there, and they're gonna like, you know, and they're just waiting for somebody to actually come up with a good idea and lead them to the next control style, you know?
I think the interesting thing about the video game industry is that developers, when they make a big budget title, they need to release it on every system, and because they're making a huge monetary investment, hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I think the industry, all the power goes to the software developers, and Roger and I might have wrote a graduate paper around that. Maybe. I think that they dictate. So, for example, when the Wii came out and all this Wii control came out, like EA was like, PlayStation, Xbox, you need to figure out a controllerless control scheme. And then they came out with Kinect and PlayStation Move. And I think strategically, I think Microsoft actually Nintendo shot themselves in the foot by releasing the Wii U last year, because it gave a whole year for other companies to be like, oh yeah, we've got a second screen too. It's called Smart Glass and the PlayStation Vita. You know, like, both Sony and Microsoft now are like, checkbox, we did that too.
I want to put an underline on something you're saying there, Dave. It did seem like the Smart Glass presentation at E3, it had a bit of haste to it, and it had some very weak links to gaming. So it was almost that blunting, you know, play of, oh yeah, we've got the tablet controller thing down too. It seemed more like a CES type of announcement, because the gaming application seemed very early, very prototype-ish.
Yeah.
Not prototypical, but anyways, very early. Very early, and and weak at best. It seemed to have more to do with controlling your TV, you know, being this remote control.
Right.
We've seen that a little bit before, the Comcast Xfinity app for your iPad. So it seemed to have more to do with watch this movie that you probably had to buy through Zune or whatever the video marketplace is for it to work.
Right.
And then I can sling it over to my Xbox and watch it there.
I thought that was interesting, because like the HBO Go app has all these like interactive features, blah, blah, blah. And Xbox was like, yeah, we got that. And like the control it with your screen. I actually, when we did talk about IE earlier, I thought that was kind of interesting. They were controlling IE with your tablet, so using that as the input device of like moving around your finger on your iPad or your tablet or your iPhone and using that to control the screen, using it as almost like a proxy for a mouse, which was kind of amusing. I'm just wondering, like, how big is this install on the iOS? Because it's like, it controls the system. It does movie interaction. It does video game stuff. It does AirPlay stuff. It's going to be like a 18 gigabyte download with everything that they want to have in there. It's going to be ridiculous. They're going to be like, buy a bigger iPhone to get this done.
Can anyone name a Windows 7 tablet? I cannot.
They're not out yet.
Oh, well, there you go.
The Windows 8 tablets. Windows 8.
Yeah, there you go.
Wait a second. The two HP guys, they're immediately denying the fact that there was ever a Windows 7 HP tablet. No, there was no HP tablet.
I don't recall this. Yeah. Don't recall that SKU.
Yeah, yeah. You know, selling.
We might have bought another company and then got rid of them very quickly.
All right, so do you guys want to grade it, or do you want to wait till the end and grade them, or what?
Well, I think we can go through the other ones real quick. They showed a bunch of exclusives. I actually thought they were all fairly, like the first three exclusives they showed were literally like, here is a single screenshot and a title screen. Feel good about it. You know, like you had no idea what was going on. And then... like some dumb Kinect games. The one that I did think was really interesting, although I might not be as interested, was they're doing a South Park game.
That looked like fun.
And Matt Parker and Trey Stone got out, and they were making fun of the whole like smart glass and all that. But the thing that I thought was interesting is that they said it took a couple of years to build the technology to make the game look South Park crappy graphics, like they had to build an engine to make it look like the TV show, and that was like really hard to do, like make it just look crappy enough so it looks like the TV show.
That's really funny.
Yeah. Usher got out and danced during Dance Central 3
as they usher in the new era of video gaming.
Yeah, they did not show the game at all. They just had him come out and sing and dance. It was really bizarre.
Well, that's because it's an entertainment device. It's an Omnibox. So these are the YouTube videos you'll watch. You know.
All right, Dave. Worst musical. What am I trying to say? Worst musical relevance to the E3 audience: Duffy or Usher?
Neither.
Usher's credit, I believe he was singing live. It didn't appear he was lip syncing, and his dance moves are fantastic. Hardest working man in Hollywood or wherever he lives, LA.
That's right. And then they closed out the show with Black Ops 2, which is the new Call of Duty. And
looked pretty good.
To be frank, I'm over Call of Duty. I've been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, bought like 6 copies of every Call of Duty game since it came out. I'm over it. I'm done with it. I didn't buy Modern Warfare 3. Sorry.
You had the blops, and you're not going to get the blops, too.
I had the blops, and I'm not going to get the blops, too.
Disgusting.
Are you going to get the blops, too, Roger?
I did not buy blops. Haven't had blops yet. I'm going in for blops, too. New
Dang.
And improved.
Dipping into the blops. All right. I don't know. So you asked what was your grade? I want to hear your grade first.
Let's grade it on a curve. I would say we have to give out an A, B, and a C. How about that?
Okay.
Interesting.
Oh, this is grad school. All right.
Someone's got to fail. 20% of you will not be here in a year. So.
Okay.
Let's not curve it. Just so everyone can get
Rin
an A.
Didn't show no, it's up. Like, it's okay.
Didn't show up yet.
I'd give Microsoft a solid B+.
I think I'm more straight B.
Yeah.
Straight
Interesting.
B.
Interesting.
I was impressed by the smart glass. I think in practice it's going to be a little weaker than kind of like when Kinect debuted. The promise is going to be bigger than what it delivers, but the promise is going to be what everyone looks to on that. So that's kind of why I give them the plus.
Yeah. Do you guys got any read on
it?
Well,
you know, as a as a guy who doesn't own an Xbox and, you know, doesn't play a whole lot of video games because I don't own a television, I thought it was entertaining to watch, and I enjoyed it, and I would give it, I'm going to say a B+, not quite in the A yet, but I enjoyed it. I'm reserving my A for someone else.
Where did it put you, James, in terms of not an Xbox owner kind of wishing you were? Where were you at in that? Well, it's a fair question. I mean,
So I would love to own an Xbox, and I actually had a deal with my wife where if we got a dog, I could get an Xbox.
Yeah, where are you at with that?
Yeah, so we got the dog, and I was like, hey, time for me to get my Xbox. And my wife at the time, she was like, all right, well, you know, is that all there is? And I went, well, we'd have to buy a television, too, so I could play it. And she went, well, we're not getting a television. And I went, ooh, that was a sly negotiation on your part.
All right. You don't have to get a TV if you got a computer monitor.
Yeah, you could hook it up to the computer monitor. We could help you work around this.
I speakers, I think, something like that. Yeah, it was... Someone I got the gabosh on it. It was pretty funny. No, I'd love to own one. It'd be good. But
Matthew, do you ever read on the Microshaft?
So I'll be interested to play Halo 4 just if for no other reason than I've played all the rest of them, and they're always a good multiplayer fest. The only problem is that I'm awful at it because I don't play it obsessively like most of my friends. So. That may not be as much fun. I will go out of my way to play the South Park game, though. That being said, I also don't own an Xbox, so I'm going to have to find a friend who will let me do that. But, you know, overall, it sounds like they're doing what... Nobody believed me, and I actually made this prediction last E3 that...
But we weren't on the air, so...
I know, no, so I just want to make this clear. Everybody thought that there was definitely going to be, like, an Xbox 780 by this point. I was like, no way. Kinect is their new thing. They're just going to iterate on it. They're really going to push forward the iterative stuff. They might someday come out with a new system, but they're definitely trying to break the mold of what, you know, PlayStation and Wii have gotten themselves into, where every few years they have to come out with a new system, and they're just doing what they're doing. You know, they're not announcing anything new. They're, you know, any new hardware, but they keep making these iterative improvements that over time, you know, difference in degree is a difference in kind. And the Xbox 360 that was originally released is not the same system, right. And you know, I definitely think that, you know, you're seeing their latest generation system, and it's a little disappointing that there's not any crazy, you know, big time new games. It's just all, you know, it's a lot of sequels, but there's also a lot of space for independent developers to come in and release great games. So yeah. I don't know, overall I'm gonna give it a pretty good, you know, maybe not the most exciting E3 ever, good. Announcements from Microsoft.
A real lukewarm.
But
C+, somewhere in there.
But I guess what the problem is that, from my opinion, they're doing exactly what their strategy is, and it just doesn't have the excitement of a new name for a system, you know. So,
my prediction, cool. Next June, new Xbox.
I thought you said CES.
You heard it here first. I'm going to throw it out right here.
I'll take the over under on that. We'll go CES.
The gauntlet is down. Now
New E3, new console.
All right.
So moving into the Electronic 3, or into EA, E3 to the EA.
There we go.
They showed 10 different games, and I wasn't, like, super... interested in a lot of them. I don't know, Raj, if you had some different points than I did, but
now my you and I agree. The big news was KOTOR, excuse me, Old Republic.
Yeah,
Knights of is there?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest ones is that the multi-million-dollar investment from BioWare to make Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic an MMO that was poised and targeted to take over World of Warcraft and get, you know, millions of subscriptions per month, blah, 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 is, I think Warcraft is at 6 million subscriptions, and Star Wars is at 1.4 or something like that. And that's mostly because the whole business model on MMOs have changed. They really went to free-to-play, and doing monetization models a lot like Valve or Steam, where, you know, buy this hat, buy this thing, and you can, you know, that's how they make money. League of Legends also is really good at doing free-to-play models. So the big news was Star Wars is free-to-play through level 15 starting in July. So you can play Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic for Frizzle.
That's got to burn to early adopters, because didn't in December it launched, right?
And you very close.
You had to buy the game beyond the subscription, didn't you?
Yeah, yes.
So what happens after level 15? I just do my $10 a month?
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's really nice of them to the drug dealers to give away free samples of their drug. You know, get the customer addicted before they start charging. That's awesome.
Right. Fair enough, though, Matt. But I think I'm going to jump on and check it out now.
I played the beta, and I was like way into the beta. But I just didn't want to swallow that $10 a month. And so I'll probably play every character up to level 15 now. taste the wares. The other one that I thought was pretty interesting from a kind of a business point of view was the UFC. The guy that runs the UFC, Dana White, was very had some choice language about how he why he was with THQ and how he'll never be with EA Sports because they're the devil and they're the worst people in the world. And EA actually came out with their own MMA game that did not have the UFC license. They tried to use like Strikeforce and a bunch of other like lower tier fighting games and try to carve out in that space. And magically, this happens at E3 every now and again where people just eat crow and come back and they're like, actually, we're now totally with you. It happened with Valve and PS3 last year, I think, or 2 years ago. So Dana White came back on stage and was like, we love EA now because they gave us a huge amount of money to have our
yeah. That's what it was.
Totally weird to me. And then a weird side thing on this was THQ San Diego. They laid off their entire studio because they were like, yep, we don't have the UFC license anymore. Go find another job.
Wow.
That's not fun at all. Yeah. That's depressing.
Yeah. That's kind
Happy
of
E3.
Happy E3. Feel good about it.
Yikes.
Yay, video games are fun.
Yeah. So I think that's interesting. We'll have to see how that pans out. It'll be interesting to see that. I think the other things they announced were not, again, you know, a bunch of sequels, Dead Space 3, a new Need for Speed. I don't know, Roger, was there anything else that you saw or read about that you were, like, terribly excited about? Madden?
You know, to expand a little bit further into, technology, the theme of this general show, I'd say that they have the Farmville kind of SimCity competitor coming out.
Oh, I'm going to play it.
Oh, come on.
What is it called?
Oh, I love it.
It's called SimCity something.
SimCity on Facebook.
SimCity Social. And I'm a Farmville addict, but well, not a Farmville. I don't play Farmville. I play Cityville. It's the chocolate sauce version or digital chocolate.
What?
No, digital chocolate has their own city game, and I'm totally addicted to it.
Wow.
So I play that, and I love the Sim games, and am totally pumped for the new SimCity to come out next year. And I saw this and was like, I'm all over it.
So there is this actually a Maxis game?
Maxis or whoever. I think EA, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you so? So you're
it's
excited
Cityville
about
without
that,
the Ville.
You're excited about it?
I am. I genuinely am, because I'm into those types of strategy simulation games. I love them. So
that's awesome.
I also thought the Madden like real engine thing that they talked about, where they were saying like anytime that there's a hit that happens, it's not just some predetermined fall or action anymore. It actually takes into account players' speed and direction and weight and all these other things, and you can. They're like,
I think
you can
they brought
pull out,
that in.
Which I was like, whatever. But
yeah, I think they brought that in from soccer, because FIFA 12, they had this. That was their big feature, was that you know, they would detect how bodies were colliding and, you know, speed, velocity, impact, blah, blah, blah. And
man, that gets rid of, like, my favorite part about Blitz, the original Blitz, where you can be, like, standing still and tackle a guy across the field. Like,
yeah. It takes out the arcadey video game-ness of it. Makes a lot more sim.
That's,
you know, honestly, video games are pushing forward the physics engines more than anybody else in the world. I mean, you get a, you know, obviously within universities and stuff, there's some pretty good development, but real world physics engines and you know, usefulness, actually pioneering that technology and rendering stuff in real time. There's nobody that does it like video game companies. It's pretty impressive technology just from that perspective, you know.
Yeah, I agree.
It's cool.
I don't think there was anything else for me in EA. And then in Ubisoft, I hadn't watched much of it until later I went back. And there was one game called Watch Dogs that was kind of an open world game where you went and it's a new IP. And I'm, as you can probably tell, I'm more interested in new IP than sequelitis. It was... You were this guy that's kind of wandering around an open world, but you had all these crazy tools. It was kind of like a techno game where you like could hack people's phones, or you could listen into their phones, or disable their phones, or like commandeer this screen or something like that. So it's kind of this like techno hacker matrixy in more real environment, you know, not matrixy sci-fi, but matrixy kind of on the tech side. I thought it was interesting. I don't know if you saw that trailer, Roger, but.
I miss that, but just based on your description, it sounds really interesting.
Yeah, you should go check it out. It's like Watch Dogs, I think. That was the one. And then, you know, Ubisoft was more into, like, you know, Rayman-led, you know, and Raving Rabbids and, you know, all the crap they usually trot out.
So I know that we didn't grade EA, but I was...
Oh, you ready?
I watched the Ubisoft one, and I was almost instantly turned off by, you know, their first demo, but that's...
The Mad Frenchman.
Yeah, but...
What was the Mad Frenchman? Misses.
Ubisoft is a French-Canadian company, so they're all Mad Frenchmen.
Oh, okay.
That's a game, yeah.
I was going to say, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah, what game is that? The Mad Frenchman.
It sounds really cool, actually.
No, they just, like, I mean, they had all sorts of off-color comments the entire time, and it was the lady, whatever her name is, who was leading it. It was weird.
Yeah. Actually, one thing that I think is interesting this year is there's a lot of video game demos where they are just casually dropping the F-bomb, because they're like, this is how real we are. This is how street tough we are in this game. This is real. We just drop the F-bomb whenever. And you're like, really? Does that... I guess it makes it more real if you can stab a dude in the neck and then shout the F-bomb. That makes it more real. You know?
Because that's what you do. That's real world.
I mean, you stab a dude in the neck, then you shout as a rebel cry the F-bomb. That's how I do it on the street.
Well, so. I think he's real.
Yeah, I wanted to go back really quick because I actually did watch the Watchdog trailer. And it definitely I don't know if you guys ever got into this, but the whole postmodern sci-fi cyberpunk movement at all, like, you know, and it definitely is. It feels like it definitely was this move towards, like, we're gonna really get it. It definitely feels like it was developed by people who really were into the whole cyberpunk thing.
Matt, do you have a tattoo of a UPC code on your arm? How into this are you?
I've read a few books. but I don't know. But it definitely, it's an exciting piece of, it's an exciting video game because it's pushing into what definitely feels like a new, not just it's a new game and a new storyline, but it's actually a new genre of storytelling for games. It's not something that very many games have ever even, you know, Deus Ex kind of got a little bit of that cyberpunk feel to it, but it was more of just a feel, whereas this game actually feels like it's trying to pursue that the undertones of of what that genre was about. So, since I thought that was pretty exciting, but yeah, I totally missed everything else from those dudes.
Right.
The Frenchman, the mad Frenchman.
I don't know. Did you have any other comments on Ubisoft, Raj?
I did, but only as it relates to the Sony show, because I was super impressed by Assassin's Creed.
Oh, well, let's just dip into Sony, and then we'll get to... We could start off with Assassin's Creed first. In the
I don't
Sony
even know. What is it called? It's got a subtitle, right? It's not a numbered...
Oh, yeah, it's Assassin's Creed 3. I think it's 3. Trace.
Whoa, after all no this way. Time? I was going to feel. I feel like there's been like 8 different Assassin's Creed.
That's also true. There has been 4 Assassin's Creed so far.
And so this is
this would actually
one.
Be the 5th, but it's called Assassin's Creed 3.
That's pretty funny.
It earned
because Assassin's Creed 2 had Assassin's Creed Brotherhood and Revelation.
Okay.
As is part this of like the Lion
Assassin's
King 1.5?
2 trilogy.
Directed DVD.
Yeah, the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy. And then we get back into Assassin's Creed 3.
All right.
So, Dave, nope. You and I were chatting during the show, and one thing I didn't chat to you, I was wondering in my mind. I say, so it's the American Revolution, and in the past we've been in Renaissance Italy for the better part of the series. I gotta think, like, most homes in colonial America were, like, single-story, like, farmhouses.
Yeah, not climbing up too tall on that.
Yeah, where'd he go? Oh, look, he's right up there on that five-foot
he's
roof.
10, yeah, he's 10 feet up.
He's right up there.
In the demo, though, they showed that dude climbing a tree, though.
Yeah, man, like, he's American sequoias, dude.
Son. That's old growth right there.
That's old growth.
So they answered by bringing it back. And Matt, you were talking about Cyberpunk and how you got into that. I can't say that I'm into it, but I enjoy it from a video game perspective, but it happens so rarely, is kind of this old naval sea combat concept. And they showed that reel, and it was all about driving your freaking boat, raising the sails, having little, you know, captain's command whistle, firing cannons, boarding the ship. Oh, I was so stoked. But I'm afraid that's going to be like one little sequence and then it's gone. I just love that to be part of the game.
Yeah, that whole sequence looked crazy awesome too, because they were literally like piloting that ship.
Fire!
Into a naval. Yeah, exactly, dude. It was awesome.
To be boarded.
It was awesome.
I think, to me, one of the cool parts about Assassin's Creed is I remember when the first game came out, I didn't play it, but I actually like sat and watched somebody else play like 3/4 of it. I'm like the worst video game player ever. but I really enjoyed the storyline of it, and so I've watched videos and I've found out the storyline of the other ones. But what really intrigued me was this idea that it was like the first game came out and they were openly like, yeah, this is going to be not just this isn't going to have a game and a sequel. This is designed to be we're actually setting up a story, which is this idea of, you know, you can go back in time and we can visit all of these different, you know, time periods. And, you know, and in each time period, you'll have all these different things going on. And so it's like, you know, we'll start way back in the day, and then we'll go here, and we'll go here, and eventually we'll go to World War II and stuff. And then, like, eventually all of this working up to this, you know, this grand story of you come back to the dude and you figure out, oh, this is what we've been looking for the whole time. We finally have searched back in your memories far enough, and now it's time for you, now that you've like trained and gotten awesome in your memories, to like unlock your full potential. And like a final Assassin's Creed is in modern day, and it's just like, you know. And so to me, it's like, it's cool to watch Assassin's Creed, and it makes me want to actually go back and play them, because it definitely has this feel of like each game's getting better. It's getting better gameplay. They're getting better graphics. They're getting better. There's this acceleration, and there's this overall long-term direction of we're going to get to this, you know, this crescendo of the series. I don't know. It's pretty. I think it's one of the more exciting series out there right now, just because there's so much direction in it.
I agree. What's interesting to me is they really
I'm
play down
for the Assassin's Creed penal colony Australia.
Just get real with some Australian penal colonies. So, Raj, you watched the opening part of the Sony press conference, the Beyond trailer. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, a couple of things about Beyond. I was a little bit disappointed if anyone had seen from Game Developer Conference. What's the name of the Heavy Rain studio?
Davis Quantic Dream. Quantic.
I don't know how I forgot that. they showed a kind of facial recognition tech, which was able to capture the actor's emotion much better facially. So they have, instead of the big ping pong balls in the motion capture suit, they had all these weird little metal rivets lined up on the actress's face. And just the emotion they were able to evoke from that capture, that performance capture, was immense. And the sci-fi storyline they had going, I won't spoil it for anybody who hasn't seen it, but look up that Quantic Dream. It's a 5-minute tech demo from GDC. Phenomenal storyline, very sci-fi, kind of this whole question of, you know, is artificial intelligence alive? What do we consider life? Very fun stuff to think about from a sci-fi perspective. Shifted, so this new game, Beyond, it just has a feeling of, I've seen that before, where it's this person, it's Ellen Page, which is cool, so I'll play it, no problem. But it's kind of cool. It looks mostly like Ellen Page, but kind of not. So anyway, she's the main character, and she has some sort of link with the supernatural, and so she has these weird kind of Stephen King, Christine-type powers. Because of her link with the supernatural. So, but it's supposed to use that facial capture, performance capture. You know, the faces are very evocative. If you've played L.A. Noir, it's got a bit of that flavor to it where you're supposed to be able to read the NPC's reactions just from watching them on screen.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
So the next thing they showed was the PlayStation All-Stars, which is I'm a bit conflicted about because I remember playing it when it was called Super Smash Brothers on the Nintendo. But evidently Sony has this brilliant idea of making a all their different IP properties brawler, much like Nintendo, and it's going to be unique, different, and awesome.
It looked more complicated.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm conflicted about it because I think actually the idea, like Nintendo all has these very iconic, almost cartoonish characters, Mario, Zelda, Metroid, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a little more gritty with PlayStation, but there's then this whole, like, just Duke's mixture of, like, literally playing with Parappa the Rapper and then the Big Daddy from BioShock. And then, like, Nathan Drake from Uncharted, and then Fat Princess from Fat... I mean, it's just this real smorgasbord of people, so it's really weird to me.
You know, in all fairness, I remember thinking... When Super Smash Bros. First came out, I remember thinking it was weird. Like, how are you going to balance all these things? How are you going to... I think one of the things is, you know, it's... I'm willing to give them a little bit of leeway on, you know, give them time to figure out how to make everything match and fit together nicely. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Solid Snake since he's a
In that?
Yeah, he was in Smash Bros, but he was...
Is he in the PlayStation one too?
I don't know. I'm assuming it's like that's got to be killing them that they if they don't have him because he's, you know, they license it to Nintendo. It's gonna just be totally annoying. You know, just like why did we do that?
You can have Raiden.
I don't know, Roger. What do you think of that game? I think you're a little more bullish than I was.
You know, initially I was pretty bullish on it, just from what I saw on the reel. And it looked, you know, it was high def in a very Sony way, very crisp graphics, beautiful sound, what you come to know and love about Sony PlayStation 3. I read a write-up by Chris Kohler on Wired.com, and his take from actually playing it was quite interesting, and I'll boil it down to this. Nintendo, when they make Smash Brothers, they maintain such a fine attention to detail that when you have the Star Fox level behind you in Smash Brothers, and you're playing as Kirby against Mewtwo, against Marth, against Ness, everyone represents their own art style and their own universe,
right?
Very, very well. And it seemed to me his comment. Maybe I'm a little colored by his comment, but just from what I've seen of the game, it does seem like it. All the characters kind of meld into the middle versus all pull out to their own distinct universes.
Right.
And I think the best example that he gave was Parappa. I didn't confirm this, but it seemed like he was saying Parappa was not his normal 2D self, kind of like Mr. Game
and Watch. Oh, weird.
Brothers. He had a little bit more dimensionality to him. So, and, you know, and Matt was saying give him time to figure it out, and they may very well do that, but I think that's where the fun comes in. You have, you know, this pink puffball. It's Kirby. He's floating around. But yet you have Link. Right. Mm-hmm. He's in his own universe and his own art style. And it makes it just that much more fun because it is this odd mashup when you see Kirby swallow Samus and all of a sudden he's got the Samus helmet on. It just, that, it's that's so, really... you know, yeah.
It's a good observation. Man, this makes me want to go play Smash Bros.
Let's do it. Then they went into kind of trumping their PlayStation Plus, and they were the only ones during the press conference to give away free swag. They talked about how awesome PlayStation Plus was, and then they were like, everybody gets one!
And you get one, and you get one, and yeah, you they get had, one.
They had not the us. Oprah moment.
Not us.
But their big thing was to... there's going to be, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, there's a lot of games that came out last year that you're going to have access to for free. So, like, Infamous 2, Little Big Planet 2, Saints Row 2. Do you hear a lot of sequels again?
It's a pretty stellar model, though. We talked about the gold Xbox Gold, $60 a year. So what is that? Help me with the math. A little over $5? $5?
Yeah,
that's the quick math on that.
So for it's $5 for PlayStation Plus as well, right?
It's $50, I think, for PlayStation Plus, so it's $10 cheaper.
So, and you get access to games, so I'm down with that.
Yeah. Are you a PlayStation Plus subscriber?
What was that? Lost you. Internet buffering.
I am, but you want to know why? It's a stupid reason.
Why?
I was so excited about Mortal Kombat coming out that I was, and this is, I'm not even joking, this is how horrible I am. I was leaving to go on a business trip, and I wanted to play Mortal Kombat so bad that I paid $50 for the year for PlayStation Plus so that I could download the early beta to Mortal Kombat and play it for 2 days, because by the time I got back, the regular demo had come out to all subscribers. Literally, if I had just waited by the time I got back, I would have been able to play it. But no, couldn't wait. Had to play it.
Totally worth $50.
Yeah. But it's actually worked out. I've downloaded a couple of their free games and that sort of thing. So it's been okay. So,
but seriously, though, Dave, it's what stole the show for us were two moments. One of those moments was they brought the Move back out. They brought the AR back. We saw iPad. I think that was last year. It just never really seems to work out with augmented reality. That's kind of one of those things that just seems cool, never really works out. And then all of a sudden, Dave's like, augmented reality, the Move. Tell you what, you involve... Oh, it was the Smart Book. So they featured the Smart Book.
The Wonder Book.
Thank you.
So if you now have an Atlas or, I don't know, an encyclopedia?
Yeah, they were showing a bunch of random crap, but then you got to go with what I called it.
The Wonder Book can then open you up to a world of wonders, the undersea, you know, and you can watch little fish. Anyways, augmented reality, it's kind of cool. We'll see if it works. And then Dave's like, books, schmucks, unless you got JK, I am Audi 5000.
Ah!
And up next, JK.
Yeah! Video game strategist.
And the British dude that Dave wanted to punch in the face repeatedly.
Yeah, so they announced J.K. Rowling's helping them out with one of their first books on this Wonder Book thing called The Book of Spells, which is a bunch of, like, Hogwarts spells, and the book's got this whole augmented reality interact with it and do learn spells, you know, kind of thing. But it was pretty amusing. I said, unless J.K. Rowling's involved with this, I don't care. And then...
Boom.
30 seconds later.
They heard you. Like, get her on the phone quick.
The Spells game looks strong. I mean, people are sitting there with a Move controller in their hand, the wand, you know, with the glowy ball at the top. They're waving it around, but on the screen, on the AR part of it, it's a one for one. They draw the Harry Potter wand over top of it, and as they move it around, it never broke graphically one time, which so it never breaks the illusion as so long as you're looking at the screen, seeing yourself waving this Harry Potter wand around.
Yeah.
I can only imagine. Do you go to Ollivander's and get, you know, the wand, chooses the wizard or the witch?
Right.
I'll be honest. I actually think it would be pretty cool. I kind of thought, I don't know if you guys ever watched the Nickelodeon series Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Yes.
So this is similar in vein, but this idea that, you know, if you get better at a game and you get better techniques, not necessarily like better at smashing combos, you know, buttons, but actually like performing physical activities as though it were like an actual martial arts, you get to do all these super powerful, cool things on the screen that you could obviously never do in real life. And I actually think it would be pretty cool if you had like a magic dueling game where like you could play somebody, you know, across the world or in the, you know, sitting next to you, and you could do a magic dueling thing. And it's not just, you know, button combinations, but it's actually like learn the spell, perform them correctly, and aim it at your, like, and have it just be like a real, like, we're going to get competitive here, you know, and you're doing, you know, you're hitting each other with spells. I definitely think that, like, that sort of thing where you give it a little, you know, you're not limited to a certain number of buttons, there's a whole new range of things that you could give. Man, that could be pretty entertaining.
You're wetting my chops here, Matt. Just take me to Hogwarts, sign me up. I'll take it. I want to pass.
Exactly.
Duel, you know?
Exactly.
Yes.
I think this book could be either not do great at all or do really good with kids. It really depends on the content. It really depends on who they bring in and what's going on. But
damn,
I
lower third bar.
Respect
David
it.
Perry totally called Jake.
Expert. I think it totally depends though. If they get like Nickelodeon, like SpongeBob SquarePants, blah blah blah, or, you know, Sesame Street book, or, you know, I think it could be really good with kids, you know, kind of thing. So it lives and dies by the content. So
yeah, that's, you know, that's true of all these, you know, platforms.
Right. So I think the next thing was, which we can go over pretty quickly because I think it was a little bit of a yawn, but PlayStation has been experimenting with having PlayStation gaming on handsets. And it used to be that only their Sony Ericsson phones had PlayStation Suite or whatever, and they announced a partnership with HTC. But I think like that thing just needs to be like an app or an add-on that just comes with every Android phone or whatever, and just make it ubiquitous, and then just let PlayStation be the brand for gaming on Android or something like that. I think they've already missed the boat. They're already too late. So it's, I think they're just messing around now.
You mentioned something that I think we may have missed over, but similar to the Wii U tablet, similar to the Smart Glass app, they kind of played up once again the fact that Vita can interface with the PS3.
Right.
Yeah. Granted, it's a hell of a, you know, it's a hell of a controller to buy, $300 plus a memory card.
So I'm gonna bring this up again because this keeps striking me. I can't get past it. Do you guys remember like the run up to the Sega Dreamcast? Sega's like, they started out with the Sega Genesis, and it was like this great system. Everybody loved it, and then they came out with like this addition. Like, now you plug this thing in, and then 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 you got the Sega Saturn, and then you got this, and you got that, and you know, and they. And, hey, just so you guys know, in case you're not looking at your screen, you're about to go to sleep. But, you know, but they came through, and the problem was is that they never had a large suite of games that for each edition. There was always one new game or a few new games, and what they really did was they really wore at consumer confidence. They wore at this idea that consumers were like, consumers felt like they had kept having to buy the next thing in order to keep up. And eventually, when they finally deployed this awesome system, the Sega Dreamcast, it was, you know, it was a next generation system. It was, had some great titles. At that point, they had worn away so much of their user base and the people following it and people who were fans of Sega that nobody went out and bought the Dreamcast, even though a lot of people would argue that it was as good, if not better, than its competitors at the time, the N64 and the PlayStation, the original PlayStation. They went under and were purchased by Nintendo. And thus ended Sega. But it definitely, I get the feeling that all three companies, and maybe it's different because they're all three doing the same thing, but it's just like, oh, by the way, now that you have this system, you should go out and buy these $7,000 worth of peripherals in order to play this one or two or three games for this one peripheral. And instead of allowing, you know, big game companies to really focus on one new type of hardware, just there's such a scattershot of stuff. I don't know. It definitely feels like somebody, and I'm hoping and praying it's not the little guys in here, Nintendo of the three, you know, mammoth electronics companies, that they're, you know, there sounds like, it seems like they're setting themselves up for just burning people out on new cool things that you can buy that don't actually have any content to go with them.
There's definitely a fine line between require, like, if you go out and say Kinect, you've got to have Kinect to play Halo 4. You just can't play it without it. That's a tough sell. Being able to say better with Kinect, as Dave's kind of touted a couple of times already, the branding genius he is, the ex-bot that he is, that's when I think, so it's kind of in this middle ground. Like, so do I have an incentive to buy Kinect? Is gaming better with Kinect, or am I fine without it? Because it's that chicken and egg. If you don't get the install base of peripherals out there, then the developers will not develop games and compelling content for it. But you don't want to turn people off at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. I think the 8,000 peripherals, I think it's a way that they're trying to extend their console life cycle, but that there is this slippery slope, because I agree with you. Sega tried that with the Sega and then Sega CD and then the Sega Enhance. I can't remember even the ones that they piled on the top of that thing.
Yeah.
I actually saw this Flickr picture once of like every add-on you could do with Sega, and it was just this pile of crap just like sandwiched on top of everything, just like womp, 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 womp.
Yeah.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
So I think they did show God of War, a new God of War, and I think a lot of PlayStation people get really excited about that, but I was just kind of like, whatever, new God of War. I don't know, Roger, were you excited about that at all?
They showed a lot of God of War. I know what it is. It's the best of its kind. I've seen it. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I do think the last thing they showed, they went out, this is, to me, the most interesting game that came out at E3.
Yes.
It's made by Naughty Dog, who they made the Uncharted series, which was very successful on PlayStation. They've went and did the first three Uncharteds. They're done with that, so they're moving on to this Last of Us. And I can't figure out if it's like a apocalyptic / zombie game or whatever, but like it's basically this older guy and this little girl, and they're going through and the scene they showed is they encountered some dudes, and like that thing got raw in a hurry. I mean, there was like freaking gun battles and shotgun fights, and like the little girl whizzes a can or a beer bottle at a guy, distracts him, the other guy runs up and chokes the dude. I mean, it was
there
raw to the max.
There was bludgeoning of human life. It was hairy. Yeah.
I saw an animated GIF of that one of the sequences where it was the people attacking the dude and his daughter were PlayStation fans, and the dude and his daughter were Sony, and just them, the obviously a
fans that weren't pleased with the with their presentation. But yeah, just the little bit of video I did see of it. It seemed pretty brutal.
Yeah, I was just really interested in the technology, like how that girl was interacting with the game, and like how this like AI player was interacting with the thing. And I'm kind of into this story already. I'm kind of like, you know, what's up with this guy and this girl, and why are they rolling through? I want to know more. Mm-hmm. And Naughty Dog is a pretty stellar brand. Naughty Dog is really good, and so. That for me was the most exciting game I've seen at E3 so far.
Counterpoint to The Last of Us, even though that as well was the best game hands down I saw from the big three, or you know, big five, if you will. My impression of the Uncharted games is that they are very, very linear. They tell a very polished, very strong story, visually and with other, you know, storytelling devices in the interactive medium. But it's so linear. I just get a little bit turned off by Uncharted. So if this is going to be a straight, you know, point-to-point adventure, it may really wow me at first, but halfway through, like any Uncharted game, I kind of lose interest a little bit. Because the puzzles aren't very puzzling, and I don't know. It's so straight. It's such a straight shot. So
I want to definitely see more. And when I go to PAX and Roger doesn't go to PAX, I'm going to be totally playing it. So.
You realize I live three blocks from SCEA. I'll just sneak in.
I know. Make it happen. So for me, I gave actually, I think Sony, this is the first time I've done this in probably like 4 or 5 years. I'd give them the edge over Xbox. I'd give them a B+.
Oh, man.
I know, and I'm an Xbox fanboy. So I'd give them the B+ over, I wouldn't give them the A, but I'd give them the B+. I don't know. What about you, Roger?
I give them the B+ as well. I know it's kind of a cop out because I said B+ for Xbox, but I think that the Sony show was easier to watch. It just felt like the people they had on stage, it flowed better. Just it was much more entertaining show for me. I don't know. It just was. I don't know why this was. And then I think the hits that they showed were a lot. They hit higher, way higher than what came out of the Xbox show. So I give them a B+ because ultimately. I just don't play my PlayStation that much, so it's hard for me to get excited about it. Assassin's Creed was one of the big hits they showed. That'll be, multi-console. So it's really Book of Spells. I don't own a Move. I don't know that I'd buy a Move for this.
Right.
And then Last of Us was really good.
James or Matthew, do you have any?
So, again, as a guy who doesn't own a PlayStation, this was the one that I would give an A to, because I, like you talked about, Roger, I thought it was a really good show. It was entertaining to watch. You know, their demos were the right length and they showed the exciting parts. You know, and yeah, Assassin's Creed, you know, that entire, you know, seafaring part, it was like, oh man, I want to try that. That looks like fun. But I thought it was good. I thought they did a good job with it. Stayed with gaming.
the thing that I think killed PlayStation 3 out the gate and, you know, was just they were the ridicule of all was terrible content, and you know I think they've clearly, I think they've clearly turned that around over the years. Yeah. You know, sounds like they have some really solid content come this year, and you know I not necessarily anything radical or revolutionary in hardware or overall tech stuff, but just you know as far as quality gaming goes, they you know. They did what they set out to do, which, you know, mm-hmm. You can ask for more, but why would you? So, I don't know. I'd give it a generally exciting.
I love Matthew just bucking the trends. Lukewarm to generally exciting.
That's awesome.
Nice. So, shall we move into the Nintendo, the last one?
Now, we have a lot to cover for Nintendo, okay? So, check everything out at e3.nintendo.com because we have a lot to cover and we can't possibly cover everything right now.
Oh, my God.
So, everyone go to e3.nintendo.com.
That was so maddening. I'm glad you caught on to that.
Show us.
It's unbelievable. I loved how, yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to talk about, James, was just, like, they spent, probably if you added up 5 or 10 minutes out of the hour show, talking about how they have so much stuff to talk about and just simply not enough time to talk about it. And then go to this website because they don't have time. And, like, their core value prop, why is the Wii U good? We don't have time to tell you.
Yeah.
There's no time to tell you why the Wii U is good. Like, it was, I'm like, why don't you quit saying all that stuff and just show us what the freaking Wii U can do?
Yeah. Well, and the other thing that bugged me was their tempo.
Oh, no.
People are, I get a sense that there is not a lot of love for the the performance.
Well, I thought Nintendo is in a very tricky spot. They're always in a tricky spot because there's such this affinity for their brands that they can't win. And so, like, they're like, yeah, you jackasses have been asking for Pikmin for years. Here's your stupid Pikmin. Be happy.
Right. And then, like, guess what? It's the same as Pikmin 1 and 2.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, but okay.
It was like, here's the map. I'm like, okay.
So Nintendo tried to actually do something unique with Luigi's Mansion, and everybody thought it was the worst thing they could have possibly done. They got berated for getting a little bit created.
GameCube, right.
You know, and it's like, and you sit there and go, I, that's what everybody, like, anybody who actually sat down and played it, but it wasn't Mario. So finally they came up with Mario Sunshine, and everybody shut their mouth, and were like, okay, thanks, Nintendo, you made us happy now. You know, and I think that it's like, yeah, that's kind of where they are. You know, it's like, what is Mario? Every generation of Mario is, we're going to add just a little bit more, but it's like the same game.
They even admitted that during the thing. They were like, you jackals want Mario every time we put out a new console. Here's your damn Mario game. Feel good about it. And they were like, it's the same Mario as before, but better. They actually said it the exact way you said, Matthew. They were like, it's very similar. It's quite, it's quite similar, but totally different.
But yeah, it's the same.
Yeah.
You know, they're such a tough spot. You know what the worst part about this is? Like, honestly, like a million billion people are going to go out and buy it. It's, you know, it's just, they're crazy successful, and, you know, people don't necessarily want creativity with these, with their, their original titles.
Not on Nintendo. Yeah. They're like, just give us the thing. And then they're like, well, that's the same looking Mario. And you're like, yeah, because you asked for Mario.
Yeah. Now, the real question is, obviously, I think, for Nintendo is, it's, you know, are they going to support third parties? Because that's what killed the Wii, ultimately, was that third parties just never got into it. And also, you know, Zelda. What's Zelda going to be like? That's what I want to know.
The thing I was surprised by is they were trotting out some third parties like they usually do, but the thing that was interesting to me was that they were like, here's the third party, but it's a game that came out last year. And so, like, their prime example was Batman Arkham City, which was an amazing game. It was unbelievable. But they added this, like, Wii U functionality, which actually looks super cool. Like, if they came out and said, this is Batman 3, I would be like, game on, I am in.
But
that's what I'm saying, is because if it was new and different, if it was a new Batman and it had these Wii U controls, I'd be like, I'm on. But I'm like, I've played Arkham City. I beat Arkham City. I played all the way through Arkham City, so I'm going to spend 60 bones to kind of enjoy the Wii U things that are kind of unique and different? No. But if it was a totally new Batman story, I might consider buying that on the Wii U to play it on the Wii U. But I'm not going to replay Arkham City. I'm not going to redo it. I'm not going to replay Mass Effect 3. That was another one they showed. I'm not going
to
redo it.
To your earlier point, and Matt, to your point, the Nintendo could fall victim to this third-party trap again, where maybe it's like the GameCube, where they get ports over to their console, but they're never going to be the lead console for a lot of these multi-platform games.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal for Nintendo. And the other weird part about Nintendo is that they play a lot of different country games and cultural games, where it's like the GameCube is awful in North America, but, you know, was crazy successful in Japan, which is the reason why the company made it through till to the Wii, you know, and you know, that's another part of the weirdness that goes. Whereas PlayStation and Microsoft kind of live and die in how they succeed in North America, that's seen reflected in the larger countries as well. You know, whereas Nintendo seems to be able to, you know, fit and niche. One of the things that they do though is that, you know, they make money on every system they sell. Not much, but, you know, unlike the other two platforms, they don't eat it on the front end. So they, you know, they're just such a strange company because they're so different compared to the other two, you know.
And one of the key differences is that they have a viable handheld platform. And in reality, yeah, what kept the Nintendo afloat during the GameCube years was the Game Boy and Pokemon.
That's true. That's, you know, actually,
we heard very
now that you mention
about
it,
the 3DS at this show. Very
That's because we didn't have time.
But there was no time to talk about the 3DS.
Right.
There was, you know, I mean, take a look here. I'm already helping Nintendo out with their stuff.
Talk about Nintendo is
no, the 3DS was weird too, because they're like, here's another Mario, you jackals.
Yeah.
enjoy the Marios again. I don't know. The whole conference was kind of weird to me. Like, the one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about and get your opinion on the tech thing, we talked a lot about other companies getting in the second screen. But to me, it feels like we mentioned this before, but I think it's most apparent with Nintendo. Nobody figured out how to make this second screen viable. Like, there's a lot of game demos with Nintendo. They're like, okay, the whole family can play, and then jerk dad is going to go and screw up everybody's game by, like, putting blocks in the way or, like, being the bad guy or whatever. Yeah. Like, it seems really weird to me that they're like, four other people will play with Wiimotes and do their normal thing, and then the Wii U person will be odd man out and playing this slightly different game. And it's just bizarre to me. I don't know.
Yeah, there definitely is this strange thing that they've done where they've you know, they got the Wiimotes, they got the nunchucks, they got the Wii Fit board, they got the Wii U handheld thing, they've got the like these new like Wii U Pro things, like they've got like five legitimate controllers that they're selling, you know. It's just like, whoa, what are we supposed to do here? How are we supposed to play these games? I don't have this many hands.
Audio.
Audio, yeah, that's right.
Better with Kinect controls.
They brought up a good point in this asymmetrical gameplay. It's a lot of fun. And just quickly, what that means is last year at E3, they showed an experience they called Chase Me. It was 4v1. So four players are playing on the TV, and the one player has the Wii remote or the Wii tablet in front of them. And the person who has the Wii tablet can see the entire map, and they're trying to avoid the other four players. The other four players can only see parts of the map. Or their vantage point is such that they can only see kind of the first-person view in front of them, but they can, you know, call out to each other. One person can run up high and say, oh, I know where they're at. They're hiding out in the top right, so everyone, you know, tries to converge on them. So this asymmetrical gameplay, but couldn't that be achieved by other means, like, you know, Xbox Live, for lack of a better example?
Yeah, you know.
And then, I don't know. The other thing that is bizarre to me is, and I don't get this about tech companies, but like the Japanese tech companies don't seem to get the internet, period.
No.
And the like Nintendo, like they're like, hey, we do internet stuff. But like the thing they showed was this Miiverse where like people congregate in this common square and they can leave messages and do drawings, and I'm like, it seemed really weird to me. Like, it didn't seem like Xbox, you're like, I want to play with this guy and I want to voice chat with him. Boop, click, bam, voice chat, match made, and you're playing a game. Like, Wii is just like, here's this town square and here's all my Miis and I'm going to leave them a picture and I'm going to, I don't get it. I don't know.
So what, Furlough Bros, what was your take on, so here's the one piece that really impressed me about the Wii U. It's kind of this, how the iPad was this instant on device. You're instantly connected, you're instantly on, you've got all your apps right in front of you with the click of a button. So now, you have the Wii U tablet sitting on your coffee table, you come home from work, we'll say, you sit, plop down on the couch, you pick up the Wii tablet, does this experience now, let's assume it syncs in with Amazon Video and Netflix and Hulu, does this now, like, some sort of I mean, define this for me in terms of, I mean, gadgets. Is this something that needs to be accomplished? Is this useful? Is there a benefit?
You know what I saw? I saw a picture of, and what it was is, this is what Nintendo expects you to do, and it has the person sitting with the tablet, you know, playing in front of the TV, and somebody else is doing something on TV. And then the picture below it is, this is what you'll actually do with Wii U. And it's this dude sitting in the bathroom. Going to the bathroom.
Nice.
you know, it's... which,
evolution in bathroom game.
I think it's one of those... I think it's going to be a weird one where if enough people buy it and there's some real success, there's a real user base... and there's an opportunity for people to develop. You know, I'm a big believer in the idea that creativity fills the void that it's presented. You know, if you have a certain music hall, the music that is best suited for that hall will fill it, and people will get creative to fill it so it sounds best, whether that's dirges or punk rock. You know, and so I think if there's a strong user base for it, and you know, and obviously this goes with all the different technologies. That we've been talking about, we'll find something cool to do with it. You know, that was what the iPad was. It's, you know, Steve Jobs came on stage and said, we don't know what it's, you know, we don't know what to do with it, but we think it's awesome, so you should buy one. And because it's Apple, you know, a million people went out and bought one, and then people figured out what to do with it. You know, and I just keep coming back to, you know, there's obviously, there's so many different chips in it, whether it's like near field communication, infrared lasers, touch screens, you know, buttons. It's just, there's so many little things that you can do with it that there's this real potential for somebody to figure out something truly awesome. The danger of it, though, is that there's still the Wii remotes, there's still the nunchucks, there's still the, you know, Wii U Pros, there's still this, there's still that, there's still this, there's still that. That at some point, I think people are just going to be like, okay, what do I absolutely have to buy? And you know, what can I get away with not buying? And you know, that's one of the more expensive parts of the Wii U, you know, universe. And I think that a lot of people, when they get the Wii U, they'll get one controller, and then that'll be it. You know, and yeah. You won't get four people. You won't have a lot of the potential. You'll have one per system.
Well, you can only have two Wii U's, and I want to know what the price point is on that second Wii U, because that might be like $200 for the system and $100 for another controller, because
right.
of the touchscreen tablet. Mm-hmm. thing. So it might be like prohibitively expensive to have that second Wii U controller. Well,
what did they sell the 3DS at?
3DS came down
$169.
Okay. And that came down from when it was originally released as, you know, because that was
right.
Those were more expensive, and then they weren't selling, so the CEO took a huge pay cut to sell more.
Right.
Assuming that NFC tech is licensed and it's fairly pricey, I'd have to say, you know, I think Dave's right. $99 is probably not too far off for a second Wii U controller. And not only the damage to your pocket, it also damages frame rate, because then you max out frame rate at 30 frames a second.
Oh, really?
If you add a second to Wii
U. I didn't know that.
It seems, it seems really weird to me. I don't know.
So I wanted to throw one tidbit out to the Furlough Bros listener crew here, and it just had to do with the omission of Nintendo's Wii U's price and date.
So not enough time. There's no time.
Yeah.
Oh, but go to the Furlough Bros podcast webpage. I'll mention it there. it's such a rich comment. Now I'll keep it brief. It's in the world of consumer electronics, we all know that hot items sell out typically at launch. So really, I won't comment on the Wii U directly, but any hot consumer item, if you're going to launch during the holiday in the U.S., it just becomes a game of how many can we produce, or how many will we have produced? Because to ship them into retail, you'll have to stop the lines and send the first wave off. I don't know. If you launch middle of November, you ship out by, you know, end of October or whatever it is. So let's say, you know, you produce a million pieces of whatever you're selling. You know you'll have a million through December. So then it becomes a game of, well, when should we launch this item, this consumer electronics item? how soon do we think we'll sell out? How soon do we want to sell out? So for the holiday rush, it just becomes when, you know, do we think we can sell out in 6 weeks? So we'll launch in the middle of November. Do we think we'll need more time? We should launch in October. So that's kind of the game you end up playing in the consumer electronics world.
Nintendo's big problem is that they're not like Microsoft and Sony, where they're sitting on a couple billion in the bank and can leverage huge amounts of debt to push that forward. They've always been a hand to mouth kind of company where they get it, they're paying Nintendo. Well, I mean
Nintendo has a huge cash reserve, but they actually squandered a lot of that. So they weren't doing so hot. They got tons of money on the Wii and the DS, and then that money's actually somewhat gone. And the rumor is that most of it went into the R&D of the Wii U.
Wow.
So they need to do well with the 3DS and Wii U, because a lot of their cash reserves are pretty dwindled.
They're still there. They're still several billion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, all right then. I'm wrong.
It's more than me.
Yeah. I think the big game that I saw that was really interesting on Nintendo was there's some cool, like, this zombie game that had this whole, like, inventory management, but it's made by Ubisoft, mm-hmm. and they made Red Steel, and I'm a little leery about that because Red Steel looks super awesome for the Wii, and then it was super crappy as soon as it came out. The one that I thought was really interesting is there's this game called Lego City.
Yeah.
That seems like Grand Theft Auto, but for younger kids, and it's Legos. And it's like this guy that's like a crime fighter, and he's like running around Lego Town solving crimes and stuff. But it had kind of almost GTA open world jump in any car feel was kind
of
cool.
The look and feel of it. It looks and feels like Legos.
Yeah,
it's animated really nice. On screen.
I'll have to check that out. You know what's weird? Lego has barely any part in that. They just licensed the name to T3 actually owns the license, and then they sub license it out to all sorts of other companies. Yeah, they're because they almost collapsed back in the 90s, and one of their big problems was they got into video games and the theme parks and everything, and eventually they decided, how about we focus on bricks, and then they licensed everything off. But it's really worked out well for them, because it's given people who love Legos but have an expertise in games, as opposed to people who love games and have an expertise in Legos. Mm-hmm. You know, they're letting those, you know, the right people build the games, and so they're right. You know, I'll play it.
So
I'm a Lego fan.
Yeah. So I know it feels like we shortchanged Nintendo a little bit, but literally they didn't show a whole lot, and they acknowledged that in their show. They were like, we don't have time to show you all this stuff. So I don't know. Roger, was there anything else, or James or Matthew, was there anything else that you guys saw?
I did get a chance to watch this commercial that James recommended.
Well, what's crazy is if it's this Zombie U game, I think, you know, that's a pretty intense, you know, serious gamer game, and they pair it with this commercial that is so corny. You're just like, oh, it was so bad. He's talking to his nondescript superhero action figure who, like, is his best friend and, like, chatting. I mean, they did a good job of showing all the features and the different things that you can do, but, man, it was just like, really, guys, that was what your marketing department came up with? You know, David could have done better.
Yeah, it was pretty lame. I thought, you know, it's frustrating because it's like sometimes they have those really simple commercials, like the when the Wii first came out, and they have the two, you know, Japanese dudes in suits come up to the door. Yeah, like we would like to play. Yeah, and there was just like that was such a brilliant marketing campaign. And then you have this, where it's just like the only reason people watch this is to make fun of it. Like, what are you guys doing?
my two closing thoughts, and I think that we would like to play the simplicity of that, Matt. It really sums up one of my thoughts as well, and that is we had for the Wii, we had Wii Sports, we had bowling, and we had tennis, and we got it immediately. And not only did we get it, but our parents got it, and our grandparents got it. It was so simple, and there was that moment, that aha moment. Oh, man, tennis.
Bowling.
And you just could see someone do it, and then you picked it up yourself and tried it. You're like, this is sweet.
Yeah.
Wii U, you know? I'm at a loss. I didn't see it up there on stage today.
The one thing they did try to do is there's that Nintendo Land, which is that like theme park thing. And the one weird thing to me is they said available at launch. They didn't say bundled with the system. So I would be freaking shocked if they came out with the Wii U and they're like, yeah, you need to buy Nintendo Land, which is a glorified tech demo. That would be horrible. So well, they better include that in the damn system.
In Japan, there was no pack in game, if I recall, with the Wii. It was Europe and North America only.
Wow.
Yeah, and eventually they came out with the whole, you know, they came out with a couple different Wii Sports packs because they realized that these simple games that people liked, they could sell them. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if they look back at, if internally they look back at Wii Sports and think, well, that was a mistake. We could have made a ton of money off of that. We shouldn't have packaged it. You know, even if we sold it cheap, you know, less than a normal game, 10, 15 bucks, that would have been perfect. You know?
You're absolutely onto it, Matt, because like I was saying, in Japan, they're sitting there in that territory saying, we're getting 250 or whatever the price is in yen for the Wii, plus we're selling Wii Sports at full $50. Hmm. In North America, you guys are giving it away.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think you're right that the tech demo for something that's weird and wild is important. And I think you were absolutely spot on that the Wii Sports sold Wiis. People would try Wii Sports, and then they were like, this is really cool. I get it. I figured it out. You know, and I think that Nintendo Land better be freaking awesome tech demo and be freaking bundled with the system.
Yeah, I remember, you know, the barrier to entry when you have to buy the system and a game is so high. You know, it's like when James and I bought our N64 decade and a half ago now. Yeah. You know, it was, you know, James bought the system and I bought the first two games, but it's like that cost, you know, it took two of us together, whereas with the Wii, you could really justify getting, you know, you could justify getting a system for each of your kids, as happened in our family eventually, where, you know, we all went off to college and whatnot with our own Wii. Well, James is already through that phase, but there were the other two. But it's like, you know, whereas before it was like, you know, and I think for them, like, there's, you know, you really need to hit, you need to get it in as many hands as possible. And I think that, yeah, that, it was such a valuable thing. I think it'd be a real mistake to charge for it, because now they've set the expectations, unfortunately, and I don't know that they're going to get the kind of
I know when the Wii first came out, I wanted to get one, and were we married at the time? I think we were just dating.
No.
And yes. And so, but I was like, I want to get one, and my girlfriend, now wife, was just like, no, that's dumb. You know, video games are stupid. I don't think so. And I told her, I said, you just have to play this for 5 minutes. That's it. And I go, this comes with it. Just try it. And I mean, it was classic where we walked in, she watched someone else play for like 30 seconds and she went, oh, you mean there's no wires attached? That's cool. And then and I told them, the two guys who were playing, I said, hey, she's never tried this before. Can she try it? And literally less than 5 minutes later, she was like, this is awesome. And a week later, I owned a Wii. And, you know, and that was, I mean, that was how it worked. And like you said, you know, it's just you get it in the hands and people experience it and they go, wow, that's cool. And you got to have something like that.
Right. So what grade would you guys give the Nintendo? I think for me, because they were the only ones coming out with the console this year, it was their year to talk it up on the stage alone, because nobody else was around with a new console and they just didn't have time to talk about it. I think I'd give them I would have given them a C+ if they had more time. I think I might give them a C because they just didn't have time.
Oh man.
My high point of the show for Nintendo was certainly the opening with Miyamoto. The Pikmin, that was a little bit cheesy once they started appearing in the crowd, but the professionally done ones, you can see. Anyways, Miyamoto still gets my heart going. I don't know why. That's totally stupid, but I'm a grown man. Why does that matter? But when I see him, I'm just like, oh, dude, it's the legend, Miyamoto. Hell yeah. What's going to get Pikmin 3? Whatever. You're still cool, man. I still like you.
That was just like the Mario thing. You guys want him. Here he is. We'll get this over with before we even start.
Oh my gosh. So that was the high point. I think for me, the low point is, you know, we still have to deal with the Wii Remote. And it's been said by many other people, the fidelity is just not there in that controller to be a next generation experience. Worked great for Wii Sports. Just the fidelity has not been there in any game that I've played on the Wii. So for that, and the show alone, because if we didn't get, you know, any proof points on Wii U, I'm going to have to go with Dave and go C minus.
Ooh!
Wow.
Shot through the heart.
Barely passing.
Yeah, I'm going with the C on it. I just, it hurt to watch from a presentation standpoint. I mean, I love Nintendo. That's the only console I've owned, and I actually do own one, but don't own a television, so it sits in my garage. But I refuse to sell it because I think one day I might get a television again. So, you know, so I'm a total Nintendo fanboy, but man, it hurt to watch that presentation. It really did.
Yeah. So now I'm kind of excited about this because I get to give the unique perspective of I didn't have time to watch any of the presentations. So I don't actually get to judge these based on none of my judgments have been based on
tone or tenor.
Yeah, it's
which
all
is
it's,
why you have your own scale. I got you now.
Right, exactly. I had a plan the whole time. What I observe is, you know, the big thing is we've known the Wii U was coming for a long time, so that's not a big surprise. But the truth from that I'm kind of seeing come through here is that a lot of Nintendo fans are going to go out and get it. I think a lot of people that got excited about the Wii, you know, that idea of expanding their user base, not quote unquote going after hardcore gamers, but the family. I think a lot of families, when Christmas time comes around and it's time to buy a new system, they're going to go out and buy the Wii U. And I think that, you know, I think that just from the technology that they're developing, what they're showing is a system that's a lot more capable than the Wii ever was. They've got this new piece of hardware that's kind of exciting. It's kind of new. You don't know what it's like. There's just a lot of potential there, I feel. And it's, you know, they just did a terrible job of getting people who pay really close attention excited. But I think like once you kind of distill it down to the people who don't pay attention at all, but you know, need to buy a Christmas present, you know, once again, you're going to go, and it's going to be pretty affordable. Like it always is. I think you're going to end up having a lot of people move towards, Wii U and picking up a couple of the harder core games. So overall, man, you know, I'm going to give it another pretty good. Cause it was, you know, I think they did what they needed to do. And I think as time moves on, I think what we're going to see is that it's a pretty good system. It's a pretty good contender. And, you know, until something really, really huge comes out from the other two companies, Wii U's going to sell systems where the Wii had stopped. So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at.
It's a good take.
Nice. I like it. I like a little contrarian, a little stir in the pot.
That's how I roll. I like to be right. That's my big thing.
That's what you aim for.
So,
fair enough.
So I think that's all the news that's fit to print on the at least the press conference, James and Matthew.
That was awesome. So three. Do you guys have like an overall thought so far this year? You know, doing that, take it back 10,000 feet and just kind of looking at it. Did it meet your expectations? You know, relative to other years, what do you think?
I think I think that Xbox and PlayStation will release a new console next year, and I think they're holding back the big guns, the big development, the, you know, here's the next gen crazy graphics, new IP, blah blah blah, till next year. So I think this was a very safe year of like, here's the next sequel, here's a very kind of iterative thing. I think that the Wii U, by announcing last year, did not really gain anything strategically by announcing that early and actually caused their competition to respond in kind in their own ways with, smart glass and the Vita cross functionality. So I think there is this kind of one-upsmanship kind of thing. I think we're seeing from all of them more and more that these are turning into media center content boxes. Like, you know, even Nintendo was saying they're going to have Netflix and Hulu and those sort of things on the 3DS and the Wii U at launch. Xbox is really going heavy in that way. Sony's going that way. So they're all trying to be that Omnibox in the living room. They want you to have them on all day long on the system. Don't turn it off for anything. Listen to music on here, watch videos on here, watch TV on here, play games on here. Don't ever turn this thing off.
I think all those points that you make, Dave, I'll add a couple of things to that, and that is Xbox definitely came out. They had the swagger, if you will. Mm-hmm. They were the only ones that mentioned, hey, we are in the leadership category, or leadership position in this category right now. We are the number one seller, and we're proud of that. So they came out, they put the front that they had was a leadership front. They were confident. They felt like they were blowing it up. They felt like they were moving it forward. They felt like everyone was chasing them. So I definitely felt that from them, and I think they have a reason to feel that way. Sony is feeling much more confident now. I think the Vita is going to be struggling, but it's a solid product. I just don't know if it's the right product for the right time. So, but they still felt very self-confident in their offerings. They have solid offerings. They should feel good about that, but at the same time, I mean, it's a tough call to continue to sell Sony products when you've got the Xbox install base growing and growing, and the Xbox Live is such a barrier to entry, a switching cost, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And the Nintendo, it was their show to win, but I just didn't see it from them. I didn't see it the same way you did, Matthew. But so
I didn't see it, so it's fair.
I didn't see the big thunderbolt come down and blow me away with Wii U.
Right.
And maybe to Dave's point, they were cooking it too long, and the hype kind of died off slowly after a full year.
Yeah. You know, I guess I'll give my I'll let James close the show. My kind of thought on all of this is, the big thing that stands out to me is that you get a bunch of different, obviously you got some good content coming in, but there's definitely this big question looming over, and I think that this is true over absolutely every aspect of the tech industry, from Facebook to Apple to Google to Nintendo to Microsoft to PlayStation to just everybody's asking the question, how are we going to interact with devices next? And there's this real opportunity for somebody to come in perpendicularly and really show everybody this is what the next 10 years of interface is going to be like. We thought it was going to be touch, but for whatever reason, that like wasn't satisfying. And now we've got gesture and 3D and voice and all of these other things, and people are really asking the question of, okay, what should we settle into? What are we going to really hardcore develop on? And I think that really and truly, unfortunately, I think all three companies really opened themselves up to vulnerabilities by including everything. They've made it now that they don't focus on anything, and so they're instead of really stepping forward and saying, hey, this is what it's going to be for the next year, what they've done is they've given the next year over to Google and Apple and other smaller developers to say, this is what we're going to do next. And I think that's a really, really dangerous position for all three companies. And like I said, you know, Nintendo is the smallest of the three, and they're the most vulnerable to that. And I think they really didn't come out in a position of leadership, which is what they did with the Wii and what saved them. And I think it was a mistake. But just from a overall technology that they displayed and how fun the games are, I think they all look pretty fun, and I'm pretty excited about, you know, games this year. And you know, I got a little bit of time, so and even a little bit of money, so I might get adventurous this year,
trying to
make some investments. But I always have two views about this. There's the actual content and how fun it is versus the companies that are, you know, doing their thing.
Good to remember that.
You know, so. That's where I'm at.
Very cool. Well, this is the closest I've ever paid attention to E3. Normally, I rely on David to give me the Cliff Notes version of it.
You got the Cliff Notes, just a two-hour version of it.
I did, yeah. Which normally, I think I get a two-hour version anyways. but no, so it was fun. I got done, and I still want to get an Xbox. I was watching one of the replays, and my wife was like, "That's just like an hour-long infomercial." It's like, "Yep, pretty much."
Feel good about it,
and it's working. Yeah. And so it was very cool. I thought that what you brought up, Matthew, were pretty good points. It does feel like there is something out there, and no one's quite 100% sure what it is. And so they're just going to try stuff and, see what sticks up against the wall, and then we'll move on from there, which is exciting to think that, there are changes. That's... And I mean, as long as they keep coming out with good games and telling good stories, which they will be, and don't get dependent on, just the flashy graphics or, gimmicky screens, I think it'll be good. I think we have a cool future ahead of us. It'll be cool.
Yeah, definitely. Cool.
Well, this was awesome, guys. Thank you very much for taking a Tuesday evening to chat with us.
Oh, pleasure.
David, you're going to have to talk, otherwise I can't read what it says.
Oh, I was just expressing my love.
I love being on the first.
Nice.
I love it. Very cool.
Yeah, if you missed the YouTube live show, you missed my lower third changing all the way through. So you have to be on the Furlough Bros.
This sounds gross.
No, you have to be on the Furlough Bros. Live podcast to see what Dave's lower third looks like.
That's right. Which
put that up there.
It's spicy. It's embedded on the website now, or it will be when I finally upload it, and yeah, it'll be on YouTube and all
that. Put some pants on.
Yeah, so thank you everybody for joining us. I am James Furlough. My brother is Matthew Furlough. Thanks again, Raj and Dave, for coming on the show and
you bet.
Joining
Thanks
us.
For having us.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
And everyone else, we will talk next time.
The big kind of untapped market for a lot of technology companies is this so-called Hispanic market. And I think beyond that, globally, Brazil is the next emerging market on the planet.
Give them the Univision.
Makes sense.
No, that's my bad, because they speak Portuguese in Brazil.
I was going to say, they don't all speak Spanish, do they?
That's funny. That's awesome.
We're all just sitting here nodding. Yeah.
Yes. Spanish.
I'm going to go ahead and go
Latin America, yes.